Hi, Kathleen. I'm Henning Mundel. My question concerns about the pricing, and you mentioned about the possibilities of that in future potentially affecting use of water. For example, if you use more water, that in fact it gets more expensive per unit. But what is the situation with pricing in terms of agricultural irrigation water? I have been under the assumption all these years that it isn't in terms of quantity at all, but it's in terms of land area irrigated. And is there any way that that could be changed? Whoops. Watch this cord. It's very tight.
Yeah, I will make sure I don't kick it. The way the irrigation districts run their pricing is based on the area of irrigation that they have the right to use the district's water. I know the districts have probably looked at different pricing schematics and those types of opportunities, but it's really the districts who have to look at that because they are managing their water supply. The districts are the ones that actually hold those licenses. The irrigators do not. So they are basically paying the district for delivery of that water to them and the infrastructure that it requires to get them there. So I think there have been some studies done on maybe there's some other ways of managing that pricing, but I'm not specifically familiar with the details of those. So, okay. Anyone?
Are there any other questions? If not, I'm just going to follow that one up.
Sure.
Or a question of my own, actually, Kathy. Do you, as a water allocator and under the Water Act, do you control the price? Because what seems to be happening in some areas is that there is a price war developing. There's a commodity market developing out there, particularly in those areas where the allocations are being restricted.
You're right. There is a market developing, and there has been lots of work actually to encourage that market to develop, because water has always been valuable. Obviously, if it's attached to a piece of land, you pay more money for an irrigated parcel of land than you do for a non-irrigated parcel. So it always has had value. Now with the transfer system opening up, we're seeing that the price or value is being attached to the license directly. And there has been lots of calls for opening up the water market so that water can be, you know, transferred or moved back and forth very easily one way or another. But again, the Water Act looks at protecting the third-party interests. And there are controls on that system in order to do that. There are probably some water licenses that maybe could transfer easier than others. And my drawing showed that it's easier maybe to transfer an allocation downstream on the same reach of river when there's nobody in between that's going to be affected by it. So, but I think over time that you've seen quite a fluctuation in the price of transfers. There have been anything from $200 to millions of dollars for an allocation of water. I think over time, the market will stabilize. It's just very new right now. And again, it's what that value of water is to you and your water use. What may be valuable to me is not valuable to someone else. So over time, I think that market will stabilize and the pricing will be maybe more static. We don't get involved in any of the discussions between the transferring parties on how much they're willing to pay for those water rights. We've seen irrigation. We saw one transfer with an irrigation district who transferred to a water co-op for a fairly, what I consider, minimal amount of water. And then you've seen a lot larger ones up in the Calgary area where they're talking about developing infrastructure or building infrastructure to encourage conservation and then have the benefit by it. But the process is intended to encourage that type of conservation. So. Okay.
My name is Byron Palmer. In connection with the amount of water that we get here, water flows into the province and water flows out. And the water that flows in, I recall a number of years ago, there was quite a discussion that went on over several meetings in connection with the water coming from the results of the Boundary Waters Treaty Act with the United States and the International Joint Commission. And from that, this committee was set up to try to evaluate the interpretation of that Boundary Waters Act, and Canada didn't want to change it, and the United States did, and so that committee was set up, and my question is that committee still operating, and have they come up to any conclusion, or have they quit trying?
The discussion was with the Boundary Waters Treaty between the U.S. and Canada on the Milk River and St. Mary Rivers. The decision was not to actually open up the agreement, but the task force was convened to look at how they could better manage the within that agreement. So opportunities for maybe better managing the water on both sides of the border. And the task force was struck. Dave McGee was actually our representative on that committee here from Alberta. And I believe the committee has made its recommendations, but there hasn't been much done in moving forward with that, because I think the recommendations was basically status quo. So.
Thank you.
I'm Luella Cronkite. I'd like to ask a follow-up question to the question about the transfer of licenses and money exchange. My understanding is that the water is still free. It's the license and the transfers that cost money. However, there has been some discussion, other than the ones you buy in the grocery store and the bottles, that water isn't free, but otherwise water is pretty much free. But I understand that there has been some discussion about, maybe not in Alberta, but can you comment at all about the idea of actually starting to put a price on water itself?
Okay. Yeah, you're right, Luella. The actual transfer is the price in Alberta. The cost that we were talking about today is actually the cost of transferring a license. And as I presented in my presentation, the license consists of the volume, those five items: the volume of water, the source, the rate of diversion, the purpose, the priority number, and those kind of things. So when we're talking about a transfer, of course, a license that has a more senior right would be more valuable than someone with a more junior right. So when we're talking about pricing water in Alberta, we're talking about those licensing changing hands. I know there has been an attempt to actually put a value on water, and there have been several studies done in that regard. I'm not really familiar with the results of those studies or the value that's been placed. I think there was actually an attempt in Alberta to put a price on the water itself, but again, I think it's a very difficult topic, because water is of a different value to everyone. Someone, again, may have what's your risk of water shortage would be much more valuable to someone with a commercial development than it may be to someone who's got a lawn watering or could stand a kind of a drought kind of thing. So I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Knut Peterson. I'd like to ask a little bit about irrigation. If there were to be restrictions imposed upon the St. Mary's River Irrigation District, for example, do you get involved in the restriction process, allocation process?
What kind of restrictions?
If there's a shortage of water, for example, there was about 10 years ago, I think there was a problem where they restricted the farmers. They were able to use so much water, and after that they had to prioritize where they used it. I just wonder if you get involved in that.
Yeah. I think there's some irrigators irrigation district people in the room that can probably answer that question as well, but yes, we're very much involved in that process. As the regulator, the irrigation districts are license holders. They do hold the largest license and probably the most senior licenses on the southern base, what we call the southern tributaries, which is the the Waterton Valley and St. Mary Rivers. They hold the largest licenses and the most senior ones. So in 2001, when we started out in November of 2000 and realized that we probably had somewhere around 50% of the water supply available, the irrigation districts were very, they set up the committees and so forth. There was a committee struck with all the 8 irrigation districts with First Nations involved, as well as private irrigation, where irrigators were also represented on those committees, to sit down and decide how they were going to manage that shortage, because, like I said, we would have had everybody junior to 1950 shut off, which was basically about 75% of the basin. We attended one meeting with the irrigators from out on the Belly River, and we put the list of licenses on the wall. It was 11 8.5 sheets of paper on the wall. The cutoff was about halfway down the first sheet. Everybody else was off for the season. So we were the holders of the information in regards to who had licenses, where they were located, what their volumes were, what their rates of diversion were. All that information is housed with Alberta Environment. And that's why I'm so excited to see that new website, the license viewers, pop up, because people can now go to the website and find out where their license is and where everybody else's license is. It's public information. But in 2001, we were the holder of that information and the regulator, and we and our staff in our office had to basically manage that shortage. And had it not been for the agreement between the irrigation districts and the water users in the basin, it would have been a huge battle to fight, because we don't have enough people in the world to be out there regulating that many people. And it was what happened was everyone agreed to cut back on their water use by, it ended up being 60%. And I think everybody managed really well in the basin. In fact, I think we saw some of the best water use and efficiency in history. And then next year, when it started raining again, water's going everywhere again. So those are kind of those efficiency things that I'm talking about, efficiency plans, conservation plans that we can in the future use to manage that water. But yeah, we were very much involved in that water sharing agreement. Because it is, although everybody talks about it being water sharing, it is actually an assignment under the Act, and it's a regulatory process. So yeah, we were very much involved.
Bev Mendel Atherstone, thank you very much for your talk. Very informative. I'd like to ask a question about the North.
The North?
Is that within your purview?
I mostly focus on the South, but if it's...
Okay, this is a question that it's just going through my mind as you're mentioning all these regulations. How is it possible with all these regulations, and especially under the framework of water in, water out, that in Alberta we can be letting the oil companies pour water in to separate oil, and in some places that water is not going to be usable again in a very long time, and in some cases it's in tailing ponds where it'll take a great deal of money, if ever, to get it back into the water cycle.
The regulations for the oil sands are no different than they would be for a municipality or an irrigation district in southern Alberta. They are licensees. The consumptive allocations that they have are appropriate for their development. They were applied for at the time. They all have priorities of license use as well. So really, and as they are seen to be a license diversion, they are consumptive use, and we don't regulate the return flow as having... We consider it being gone from the system and used, same as any other licensee in southern Alberta. So in terms of regulating how they are managing their treatment of that water, that comes under another act. It's the Environmental Protection and Enhancement Act, and they also have approvals under that act for operation of their facilities. I'm not familiar specifically with their approvals. They also would be available online. There's an approval viewer on our website, on the Alberta Environment website, where you can look at those approvals. Okay.
Michael Cormican, and Bev almost stole her part of my question. I guess great minds think alike. Has anyone got a handle on how much water we have over a period of time in the province as a whole, given the huge consumption of water? We're told it's about, I've seen 3 and 4 barrels of water to get a barrel of oil, and it being lost to us. And losing that at the current rate of 1 million barrels of oil a day, so that'll tell us it's 3 or 4 million barrels of water a day that's being used. But does anyone have an idea, or has anyone made projections as to what we, what amount of water we have in the province, say over a 15 or 20 or 25 year period, and given all the considerations, what we will need, and just to let us know so we can plan. Like, I haven't heard anyone mention an overall figure.
Again, I'm not involved with regulation of the oil sands and those kind of things. So, but it does depend on the individual streams where the water is coming from. We've had a lot of study on the availability of water in southern Alberta. Part of the South Sask Water Management Plan, that was part of the review. So we do have a good handle on what our natural flows would be. That gets into a discussion about what's natural and naturalized. But I'm not familiar directly with what's going on in the oil sands and if they have an estimate on how much water it uses to produce a barrel of oil. I'm not familiar with that, unfortunately. So I don't think I can answer that question, sorry. But in we have a lot of information, and the portal that I mentioned, there is a lot of information and reports that were written for the South Sask Water Management Plan that are on that portal. You might want to take a look at that. So.
Thank you, Kathleen. My name's Dwayne Pendergast. I'd like to go beyond this discussion a little bit into a little bigger picture. We use a lot of water for irrigation, and I suspect that most of it is evaporated through the plants that are grown. It goes into the atmosphere. It comes down somewhere as rain. And I'm wondering if we're doing a study to see how much our neighbors to the east benefit from that.
I don't think that's in my realm of expertise, actually. So, I'm not really a climate change expert or even a crop specialist, for that matter. But I don't know that I can answer that. I'm sorry. So.
Are there any more pressing questions? We've got about 5 minutes left. Yes, please come up. This time, actually, not a question, but a little bit of a comment. So you can relax and you can rebut my comment if you wish. And that is that the question was raised about. Knut, you're asking in terms of the irrigation and the rationing year 2001. I used to work at the research station, and numerous farmers told me at the end of that year they've had some of their best yields because they were managing the water according to need and not because it's there.
Yeah, that actually I think was true. We found I think the next year when it started to rain again, that people were maybe not managing water as efficiently as they did the year before. When you have to limit or stay within the allocation that you have, and at that point that was 60% of the volume that they would have had that on a normal year. Also, we saw during that year that people were, perhaps if they weren't as efficient, they would actually sell their water rights within the district, or their availability within the district, and I think they were using the water more efficiently within the district system itself. So, but yeah, I think when people are forced to, they will use the water more efficiently. The same is true for municipalities. When we see municipalities who have no meters on their system, we find once the meter is put on, 50% of the water use goes down. So it's 50% of the water use that was previously used. So I think it's also a knowledge type question. As long as you know how much water you're using, maybe it's people will be more conservatively minded if they know how much they're using. We've seen also in some subdivisions that, you know, they would be watering their lawns and leaving the hose run all night long where they didn't probably need to before, and letting the water run off somewhere else, really wastage, where when they put the meter on, then they would say their water use drastically dropped. So I think that had a lot to do with it. But yeah, that mindset really has to get into people, that water is something we need to conserve. And there are measures, there is technology and things I'm sure people will come up with way better ideas than I can to find ways to conserve that water. So, and I know the districts are very encouraging of that too, because then that leaves their allocation for other uses as well.
Thank you. I think we'll make this the last question.
I get the last word?
You get the last word.
Can it be the last comment? It's not so much a question. There was a previous question that my name is Gerhard Hartman. There was a previous question that talked about the amount of water to produce an amount of a product. I'd like to caution all of you to be careful about what you read or see or hear with figures like this in the media and so on, because it depends so much on where the information comes from. And it's very easy to distort and or pump up these numbers. For instance, Stephanie, what's the number that came out of that little booklet we had that talked about the liters of water to produce 1 pound of beef? The number was in the order of 1,560 or something like that. It takes about 1,500 liters of water to produce 1 pound of beef. So remember this next week when you're eating your beef lunch, okay? Now, that number may be correct, but it probably includes every little bit of thing that you can think of to produce the beef, not just what the cow or the steer drinks, but what it takes to wash down the floor in the killing plant, what it takes to the guys to drink while they're on the job, who knows how much it includes, okay? So it's in the minds of the beef producer, it's a way badly distorted number, okay? So my comment is one of caution.
Thank you, Gerhard. On that note, I think we'll close this session and say thank you very much to Kathleen.
Thank you.